Do you remember, Martin, that we have a YouTube page? I don't know if you remember.
Do I remember? Yeah, I remember. I remember it, yeah.
Do you? Good. I wanted to check, because obviously I just want to remind people as well, we do have a YouTube page, and it's where we look back at Eurovision past entries that have scored Norpois, and we decide, do they deserve that score? Thank you very much to David Hall, who commented on our latest YouTube video, where we decided, did Austria's Lisa Mona Lisa deserve Norpois? David says, I remember this year contained what I believe to be the worst Eurovision song of all time, but it's not Lisa Mona Lisa. Look up Greece's song Clown on YouTube. It'll make both your eyes and ears bleed.
Okay. Not a big fan of that one then. Right, we're going to have to get on that.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, David. And yeah, do check out our YouTube page. We're on lots of different social media channels. We'll tell you more about the rest of them coming up on this edition of Norpois.
Norpois is shameful.
Norpois is lack of respect for Euros.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
The shame that they must be feeling.
Norpois is no fun.
Yes, welcome to Norpois. We are a Eurovision fan podcast based in the UK. My name's Martin. That is Laura Kress.
Hello.
I have got a little musical instrument with me today.
You have?
Hey.
Lovely. What's this all about then, Martin?
Well, very, very shortly, we're going to be going live to Moscow and speaking to the BBC's Russia correspondent, Steve Rosenberg. And you might think, well, why on earth are we talking to Steve? Steve not only is a brilliant journalist, he's also a brilliant piano player.
Yes.
And Eurovision fan.
Huge Eurovision fan.
He's combined all of that with some really great videos that he's been putting on social media recently, stuff he's been doing on TV. We can't wait to talk to him about Eurovision. Of course, we'll talk about the Russian entry, Russian reaction, loads of stuff besides. A great interview coming very, very soon on this edition of Norpois.
That's right. But first, we've also got some exciting news. And it's kind of news we knew, but it's now being confirmed. Eurovision this year is going to proceed with a limited audience.
Yeah, this is so exciting, isn't it? We knew that it was a possibility because it was part of the Dutch trial events that they've been doing, these test events that have been happening in the UK as well. They're finding out, can big events like this run with things like lots of COVID testing and measures being put in place? And they're making the Eurovision final and the Eurovision events one of these test events, meaning, yes, an audience can be there, which I think is going to make such a difference to just the feel of Eurovision this year. It's going to make it, the atmosphere is going to be wonderful.
Yeah, definitely. They basically said a maximum of 3,500 audience members will be allowed to enter the arena. That's about 20% of Ahoy's capacity in Rotterdam. There's no general public sale for the tickets. So if you're thinking, oh, wow, I want to go to Eurovision this year, too late, mate. No, it's basically tickets are only going to be available to those who successfully purchased tickets for the 2020 show, which doesn't include us, because if you may remember, if you're a long-term listener of the podcast, we did not manage to get tickets last year.
No. But it's great that some people will, and I do think it's going to make all the difference, actually.
Sure.
Really, really, really looking forward to that. So well done, the Netherlands, for sorting that one out.
Well done. And it's worth saying, of course, people might think, but, you know, there is a global pandemic going on. What's going on? How are they going to keep that safe? There's going to be loads of health and safety protocols. I think people are going to have to take a test before and afterwards. I'm not sure. I think everyone will be probably quite equally socially distanced around the venue. So, yeah, there's still going to be precautions, even though 3,500 people sounds like a lot of people. It's only 20% of the venue.
Now, we love to celebrate Eurovision fans on this podcast, and every year we look forward to appearances on TV here in the UK from the BBC's Russia correspondent, Steve Rosenberg, because not only is he an extremely talented journalist, he's also a great piano player and Eurovision fan. And in the run-up to each competition, he plays a few of the entries on the piano, and over the years, they've just become really, really popular on TV and social media. So we thought, well, we've got to have a chat with Steve. So let's go to Moscow and speak to Steve Rosenberg. Hi, Steve.
Hello there. Hi. Great talking to you.
You too.
I should explain the setup that we have here because Steve is sitting at his piano. I am sitting at mine. There we go. So we're ready to go. I've just seen, Steve, that you've been putting a great little video on Twitter in the last few moments of you doing a kind of Eurovision and then Kalinka, a Russian folk song mashup. So I thought I'd sort of demonstrate the two bits. So the Eurovision theme obviously goes like this. And then Kalinka is, what is it? Something. But you've sort of mashed those two together, haven't you?
Well, I tried to, yeah. It sort of came out like this, really. I had to put the Eurovision theme in a minor key. But
okay. It's very good.
Can imagine the balalaikas going, the fur hats, the vodka flowing.
Exactly, yeah. Excellent stuff. Now, as we were saying, we love to chat to Eurovision fans on this podcast, and you are a very big one. How did you become a Eurovision fan there? How did it all start?
It started when I was very young. I must have been six or seven. And see, Eurovision was one of the few programmes I was allowed to stay up late and watch when I was a kid, and I just loved it. The music, because I was into music, the crackly phone lines for the voting. It was amazing. It was exotic. And the thought that hundreds of millions of people all over the world were watching the same program that I was watching, it was just amazing.
Yeah.
I watched it every year. And I found that I could pick up some of the tunes, some of the songs on the piano. I sort of started collecting Eurovision songs. And that's like some people collect stamps or matchboxes or coins, and I was collecting Eurovision songs. So I think I can play around 300 Eurovision songs.
Wow.
It's sad, isn't it? I think I need to see a doctor. But I love it. I love them. You know, people knock the Eurovision Song Contest. They criticise it. But actually, it's produced some amazing songs over the years. It really has.
And I wonder if it's because of that restraint that they have to be 3 minutes long, and it forces people to come up with catchy hooks and things that are going to cross the language barrier as well for people who don't necessarily speak English or whatever language is being sung by the person. That's got to be more of a focus on that catchy hook to get people in. That's going to create a great pop song. Let's talk about the Russian entry, Manisha with Russian Woman. It sounds like this. Now, Steve, you've met Manisha, of course, and there's a really, really great interview that you've done with her. I'm wondering how you'd characterise the Russian reaction to that song.
It's been a pretty negative reaction in Russia. It's not the typical kind of Russian Eurovision song. And, you know, Manisha is a very impressive character, and she supports the kind of causes that it's not really the thing to support at the moment. In Russia, she expresses support for the LGBT community. She speaks out against domestic violence, domestic abuse. She tries to break down stereotypes, female stereotypes. That has sparked a lot of opposition from sort of center-right politicians here, from various veteran groups. And she's had a lot of abuse, a load of abuse, and you know, threatening messages too. So it's a difficult one, you know, for her. She admitted that, you know, she was thinking possibly about pulling out, but she decided, you know, the show must go on. And she's determined to get onto that stage in Rotterdam and put in a good performance. I think musically, the song, it's not easy because a Eurovision song, it has to be memorable. You've got to hear it once and, you know, you sing it, you whistle it after that. Her song, you know, it's quite a difficult one. It's quite a complicated one. I'm not sure whether it will go down well with people across Europe. But as a person, she is amazing. She's a very impressive person. And she's got a great voice. So she will really let it rip, I'm sure, on the stage there.
And speaking of Russia's sort of reaction to that song, what's Russia's attitude to Eurovision in general? You know, do they get the humour of the Eurovision, the kind of campness of it, or what do they think about Eurovision? I'd be very interested to know your answer about this.
You know, whatever Russia enters, whether it's the Olympic Games or the World Cup, it wants to win. And it wants to come first in the Eurovision Song Contest. So when in the mid-90s, Russia, you know, first started entering, it took a while for it to work out what kind of song and what kind of artist it needed to enter. But when it got that right, my goodness, you know, they've put in some great results. But they take it very seriously. You know, in the UK, well, we're kind of used to kind of coming low down the leaderboard, aren't we? And we just love the Eurovision Song Contest for what it is. You know, all these countries get together and have a sing song and, you know, great, brilliant. Doesn't matter if we don't win. If Russia loses, then it starts to blame the rest of the world. It thinks there's a plot against it, you know, that everyone's out to get us. So they do take it seriously. But when they lose or do badly, then, you know, all the insults start flying against the West. There was some plot out against Russia.
Let's talk about this year then, 2021. I know, because I've seen the video of you playing loads and loads and loads of the entries, that you have listened to many of them. So which one stands out for you, some of the entries that maybe are your personal favourites for 2021?
I think it's a great year. I think it's a bumper year for Eurovision. Yep. There are some brilliant songs. And it's difficult to say which is my favourite. I mean, there are six or seven that I really like. I really like the Swedish song,
oh, yeah,
for example.
Well, let's have a little listen.
Voices.
Yeah.
I think it's Tusa, isn't it? The performer.
Yeah.
He sings about a million voices, which reminds me of the Russian entry from a few years ago, which was called A Million Voices.
But oh, anyway, yes, of course.
I really like that. But I also really like Spain.
Beautiful one, that, isn't it? Very good. Very good.
Iceland's got a good song. Switzerland's got a great song.
Yes.
I was going to play you the two that Laura and I are interested in for very different reasons. I was going to play you Dorothy's 10 Years because, as I keep reminding anyone who'll listen, we're in it. We're part of the virtual choir.
Really?
We submitted our entry into that. So we're in that. And
you won't hear us, Steve, so don't worry. There's about 1,000 people that took part. So, yeah, you won't actually hear us.
Yes, excellent.
That's that one. And then, of course, we have to talk about the UK entry.
Of course.
Yes. What are your thoughts on that, Steve? Do you like it?
I do like it. I think, you know, I think it's a good song. You know, I don't think it's going to win, but I think it's a good song. Absolutely. It's a modern song. It's a song that you can, you know, imagine being played on the radio as ever. You know, a lot depends on the staging, doesn't it? But I like the song. Absolutely.
Here we go. I've got, I've been working on this one.
Hey, well done.
One thing I'd like to ask you, because just hearing all these, I'm not going to crack out the piano, by the way. I'm just going to stay here by the microphone. I'm not going to go into a little song myself now. But I would like to know, Steve, before we maybe go into more songs, is hearing all this lovely music on the piano, what are your thoughts about an orchestra ever coming back to Eurovision?
I really miss the orchestra.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure, like you do, you know, if I've got a bit of time at home, I'll sneakily switch on YouTube and look at an old Eurovision Song Contest from the old days.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing to have an orchestra, a live orchestra. But I suppose, on the other hand, you know, it must, when you talk about the cost, it must cost an awful amount. But I just think if you're having a big contest like that, to have a live orchestra, it's something very special.
Yeah, I think of a show like the BBC Strictly Come Dancing, you know, massive Saturday night, big glitzy thing. They have a live band and I think it makes all the difference. I really think it adds something.
Absolutely. And there was all that camaraderie between the conductors as well, you know. And some of those conductors became even more famous than the performers. So, yeah, it'd be great to think that one day a live orchestra could come back. Actually, I just remembered a story you were asking about and what Russians think about the Eurovision Song Contest. One of the funniest things that ever happened to me in the sort of nearly 30 years I've been living here was in the mid-90s when I was having a tour of Russian state television. And I wandered into a studio where they were rehearsing for the Song for Europe contest, so Russia's national final to choose the song to represent them. And I got talking to the director of the program, and things were so much easier then. So he said, oh, you're a Eurovision fan. Well, why don't you come on the show tonight? So I found myself co-presenting Russia's Song for Europe contest. That was like 1996, I think. It was amazing, you know. Sadly, the song that won that year didn't actually make it through to the final because they'd introduced a kind of a semi-final thing. But in those days, things were simpler. The thing I remember about that studio, there was a big sort of European flag. At that time, going back to the 90s, Russia really felt it wanted to be part of a common Europe. It wanted good relations with the West. It wanted good relations with Britain, with Brussels. And it's, I think it saw the Eurovision Song Contest as a way of coming in from the cold after the years of the Cold War and the Soviet Union and communism, and actually being part of not the European Union, but this common Europe. And things have changed so much here. You know, Russia has sort of taken a different path now. It's turned its back on Europe, on the West, and it's going in a different direction. Mm. And I find that very sad because in the 90s, you know, in that studio, watching that contest, being part of that presentation, it really felt as if the days of communism were gone for good and Russia and the West would join hands and sort of it will be happy ever after, but it hasn't worked out that way.
I think it goes to show as well that no matter how much you say that Eurovision has nothing to do with politics, and, you know, in a way it doesn't, it's never too far away. I think back to the time following the laws which discriminated against the LGBT community and hearing Russia booed at the Eurovision Song Contest. And I do think, goodness, this just goes to show. And also following the annexation of Crimea as well, there was booing for Russia then. And I think it really does show this relationship between Russia and Europe and how that really is on a bit of a knife edge at the moment.
Absolutely, yes. We have a lot of fun with Eurovision. It is, after all, just a song contest. But, you know, there are many people for whom it's more than just a song contest. I remember meeting an incredible pensioner in Tallinn, in Estonia. It was the year that Estonia was hosting. And, of course, Estonia had been part of the Soviet Union. And this guy, had, in Soviet times, secretly built himself a satellite dish in order that he could watch the Eurovision Song Contest, because for him, Eurovision was a symbol of freedom. He had secretly gathered the parts together and built this dish to watch this program. He used to organize secret Eurovision Song Contest parties for his friends. I said, well, why was it so secret? Because I could have lost my job, he said, if this had become known that I'd built the satellite dish and I was watching the Eurovision Song Contest. And that really brought home for me that actually Eurovision was more than just a song contest. It was a symbol for people, a symbol of the West and of Europe. Now, maybe that's changed. But even so, it's great that there is this event, I think, that can bring people together, bring countries together. Yes, there's arguing and there's politics comes into it. But at the end of the day, you've got Europe sitting down and taking part in this great, fun, colourful musical extravaganza. And that has to be good, doesn't it? That has to be a good thing in terms of bringing people together.
Definitely. And I think we sort of forget that a little bit in the UK. I think we, as you've said before, we do tend to take it a little bit more lightly. It's just a silly song contest, you know, and I think people do forget that there is a lot more history and there's a lot more going on than just, you know, someone ripping a skirt off and doing, you know, a key change and that kind of thing. There's a lot more going on than just that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that Russia continues to stay in the Eurovision Song Contest. You know, I hope that politics doesn't get uglier, nastier, and that, you know, decides to pull out. That would be a great shame, you know. There's been a lot of abuse directed at Manisha this year, a lot of criticism of the song contest from Russian politicians who like bashing the West at the moment. But I really hope that they stick with it, because I really think that music can bring people together. It really can.
Speaking of that, let's get back to the piano playing, which I'm keen to hear more of. And I think we should go back in time. You said that you can play over 300 Eurovision songs. So go on then, Steve. We're going to put you on the spot now. Which one?
300.
Yeah, all 300. Please.
No, go on, yeah.
Which one is your favourite to play of all time?
It's really difficult. It's a difficult one because it changes. I mean, I love so many. I love Hold Me Now, Johnny Logan, from 1987 for Ireland. I Love Shine a Light. There are so many lovely ones. Absolutely.
Just doing a bit of Hold Me Now there. So.
Big Steal or Borrow, I quite like.
Oh, yeah.
Which didn't win the Eurovision Song Contest for Britain. I think it came second in 1972,
How's
maybe?
That one go? Is that... Was it...
Yes, it was like this. Thank you. I like that. The UK's had so many second places, hasn't it, in the history of the Eurovision Song Contest. Mm. There were some great songs.
I reckon we should end this by maybe doing a little duet. I thought we could do the Russian entry, if you were up for this. We'll see how it goes. It could be a complete disaster, but let's throw caution to the wind.
Russian entry. There's some Eurovision songs are so simple, you can listen to them once and then play them.
Yeah.
The Russian entry this year, I had to listen to, I don't know how many times, hundreds of times, because it's quite a complicated one. Let's give it a go. if it works out, maybe Manisha will hire us.
Maybe.
So, okay, so this is this, so...
both of you. Well done. Excellent. I think that worked.
Great. Oh, that was good fun. Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It genuinely has. Thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast. And
you're welcome. It's been great fun. Great fun. Always happy to talk Eurovision.
Oh, yeah, genuinely, thank you so much, Steve. It's been brilliant. And thank goodness, it's only a few weeks until this year's Eurovision. Really looking forward to it. I'm sure you are as well.
Oh, I look forward to my Eurovision Song Contest fruit salad.
Oh,
which we always make as a family the night of Eurovision with 25 different fruits to represent the 25 different countries in the final. It's become a big tradition, so I can't wait to make that, yeah.
Amazing. I'm glad we got that in.
Don't worry, the doctor's on his way.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Steve, once again for that. That was excellent. And your piano playing was all right as well, Martin.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, all right. Let's move on. Now, you might remember we were talking recently about Hooverphonic, who have made their own beer as sort of as part of Eurovision and just part of their own thing as well. Obviously, Belgium, very known for its beers. Well, Davy's got on the old beer wagon as well.
Everyone's jumping on the beer
everyone's
wagon.
Making
everyone
beers.
Wants their own beer. Darby's got one as well, has he?
Yes, Darby's got one as well. I have to say, the can looks amazing. We'll maybe post a picture of this on our Instagram, which I'll give you the details of shortly. But yeah, it's a really nice, it's a brightly sort of green-coloured can, as you would expect, and it's got their little pixelated faces on. And guess what it's called, Martin? Guess what the beer is called? Come on.
Well,
come on.
It could be something to do with the song. The song's called 10 Years.
Yeah,
so is
yeah.
the beer called? Okay. 10 Years. Yeah. Older?
No.
I don't know.
No, come on.
10 years Eurovision.
No.
I don't know.
It's called 10 Beers.
Oh, it's actually a lot cleverer than I thought it was going to be. That's great.
It's literally called 10 Beers. It's a cream ale and it looks like very inviting. I haven't seen inside it, but the can looks lovely. And yeah, I think, unfortunately, it's only available in Iceland at the moment.
Oh,
so,
well,
yeah, I know.
Come on. Get that ship round the world. That'd be great.
I know.
I don't even like beer and I'd give it a try.
There you go. That is, you can put that on the can, Darby.
Yes, you can. Right. Before we get into correspondence, thank you. Before we get into correspondence, I just wanted to let you know, if you haven't done it already, go back and listen to our Ones to Watch episode. If you're really into Eurovision, but you haven't maybe had the chance to listen to every entry and you can't really be bothered to do that, what we've done is we've done a very special podcast, and we did this when we knew all of the entries that were going to be taking part in the 2021 competition. And we've picked six that we not necessarily think are going to win. We just think are worth watching, maybe worth telling your mates about. So these could be the ones that are going to do well. They could be the funny ones. They could be the ones that you need to see for whatever reason. That podcast should be there in your feed. Go and look for it. It's called something like Ones to Watch or something like that, isn't it? So go and have a look at that. Thank you. That's the public service message over. And now here is what you've been saying to us in correspondence.
Yes. So I mentioned earlier, we're going to try and put that picture up of Darby's beer, probably on our story. So check that out. We are Nullpoir Podcast on Instagram. Now, we have had some correspondence. Thank you very much from Simon, who messaged us about last week's episode where we did our compare and contrast feature, and that was with Lithuania and The Roop. And we said we both agreed, I think we preferred On Fire, and we weren't sure. We liked their latest performance, Discotheque, but we weren't sure how that was going to translate on stage. Well, Simon disagrees. He says, I have to disagree with you on The Roop and Discotheque. Every year at Eurovision, there are one or two songs that on listen alone might not make the biggest impact, but a perfect stage performance and presence elevates it to another level. He gives Fuego as an example. Then he says, look up the performance of Discotheque at the AMA Awards and you'll get an idea of what's in store for Rotterdam. Amazing. And he also adds that he thinks Senhit with Adrenalina is going to be another one who's going to light up the stage and has got some exciting performances. And that is true. We do always say it'll be interesting to see how the staging is going to affect a song. So I think that's fair enough, Simon. Who knows? Maybe Discotheque is going to be another one that's exciting. I certainly am excited for Senhit and Adrenalina.
I know
and
you
Flo
are.
Rider.
You're obsessed with it.
It's going to be so good.
It really, really is, isn't it? It's going to be something else, especially if Flo Rider can actually be there. I think that is. Absolutely fingers crossed for that.
Yeah.
That is going to be marvellous. And I so agree with you on the staging situation as well. We say this every time. The song is but one part of a reason that you might end up voting for a particular country's entry. And staging is a big part of it, and sort of everything around the hype around it. There's so many reasons why you might vote for a song more than just the song.
Totally.
Yeah, it's called the Eurovision Song Contest, but there is far more to it than that. So well pointed out, and a very good point to make. Thank you very much for your call. No,
well,
sorry.
I could give the Twitter page, and I know no one emails us, but I may as well give that.
Sure, you do it.
Please, Barton, let me do my job. If you do want to tweet us, and people do, we are at Poinul. And obviously, if you do want to send us an email, nullpoirpodcast@gmail.com. And I should say as well, please do subscribe. We do these every week, but subscribe so you know when it's coming out. It's normally on a Sunday. And also, give us a 5-star review on iTunes as well. There we go. Now
and
you
I promise,
carry on.
Thank you. And I promise not to make any more mistakes.
Well,
it's a bit of a hollow promise because it probably won't happen.
It's going to happen.
Yes, I shall try and end the podcast again by saying thank you very much for listening. It has been an absolute pleasure. We shall be back next week with another edition of Nullpoir.